But first, we have New York Focus, the independent newsroom reporting on how power and politics in New York impacts people's lives and how the state really works. Radio Catskill partners with New York Focus to regularly bring their in-depth journalism to you. And in recent reporting, that journalism is exploring New York's healthcare financing, delving into the massive influence of the Greater New York Hospital Association. And its influence is lucrative. The reporting shows Greater New York brought in about $1 billion in the past decade, not for hospitals, but for itself in profits, when its for-profit businesses sold off some assets. But why does a nonprofit collective purchasing group even have for-profit businesses under its umbrella? To get a better handle on this complicated story and to hopefully learn how New York's top lobbying group has shaped healthcare policy in the state, I spoke with Chris Bragg, Albany Bureau Chief at New York Focus, earlier today.
I started looking at this story because I got a tip that essentially if I looked at the 990 forms of the Greater New York Hospital Association, which are the annual tax filings they have to submit to the IRS, essentially there would be something interesting in the number of for-profit companies that Greater New York was running, because when you normally think about this lobbying group, you think of, you know, something that runs TV advertisements and lobbies the legislature and the governor and tries to get more healthcare funding in Albany. You don't necessarily think of the fact that they have eight for-profit companies being run out of the same office that are also making money off the healthcare system. So I started looking at their tax filings and saw that their net assets went from about $200,000 in 2012 to $211 million in 2022. So, you know, about an 86,000% increase. So I went from there and started trying to look into how they made all that money. It turned out after a couple of weeks of reporting that there had been this long New York Times series in 2002 about what are called group purchasing organizations. Basically, these companies that serve as middlemen between vendors of healthcare products, pharmaceuticals, bandages, needles, et cetera, and hospitals. And Greater New York had one of these group purchasing organizations, kind of a ready-made thing for them because they're, you know, the lobbying group for all these hospitals around New York. So they served as the middleman negotiating prices on medical products between vendors and their hospitals. So that's basically a money machine, is I think what we called it in one headline, because no matter what is purchased by the hospitals, the group purchasing organization gets a 3% cut of that. As a result, healthcare spending in New York has gone up, the profits of Greater New York's companies went up. And so it's kind of a cycle, because Greater New York then has more money to put back into lobbying from that money that they got from, you know, the state healthcare spending.
Sounds like there's a lot of money going from Albany to hospitals, and Greater New York is there to get their cut of it, yet hospitals are struggling.
Yeah, if you look at at least what the hospitals report in their tax filings, as of the most recent ones, two-thirds were reporting spending more than they made, so they're losing money. And some of them, I think about 75, to the point that they're on what Greater New York termed a financial respirator, basically, you know, a few weeks from running out of money without state help. So that is a problem, and it was a complex story to report because you don't want to minimize the fact that there are a lot of hospitals around the state, a number especially in New York City, that are hurting financially. At the same time, you have some hospitals that are making a ton of money, particularly in Manhattan. So how the state handles that and funding Medicaid in particular is a complex issue. But yeah, you do have, again, Greater New York, at the same time, the umbrella lobbying group for all of these hospitals. The executive is making quite a bit of compensation. Obviously the lobbying spending going up on behalf of those hospitals. So it's a, you know, multi-layered issue, I think.
Can you give some examples of how much money that they're getting to run this lobbying, which is a nonprofit up front, but as you said, also involves some for-profit?
Actually, the top executives of Greater New York, even though it's principally a lobbying group, have not been paid, from what I could tell, for decades out of the nonprofit. They're paid solely by the for-profit companies. They typically had made $2-3 million a year. I'm talking about the top two guys, Ken Rasty, the president, and then the head of the for-profit companies, Lee Perlman. And then in 2013, there started to be this huge spike. What happened is that Greater New York had a longtime partnership with a company called Premier that was one of the country's biggest group purchasing organizations. Through this partnership, in 2013, Greater New York was made the largest stockholder in Premier, which became publicly traded that year. Greater New York owned about, I think, 12% of the stock, and Premier was the biggest stockholder. And from 2013 to 2020, had the option of liquidating all of its stock in Premier, which it did. And as a result, Rasky started, I think his highest salary was over $12 million in 2016. Perlman was almost $13 million in 2016. And they made, I think $50, $60 million collectively, each, within about a 10-year period. So pretty high compensation for, you know, running a lobbying group.
So how are they successful at increasing healthcare spending in New York?
Well, one part of that is the amount of resources they have from the for-profit companies. Their federal campaign donations were not very high at all. And then after this, these transactions with Premier and selling off a bunch of their assets, making actually over $1 billion over the past decade of selling companies in the group purchasing world. Their campaign donations went up dramatically in Washington, over $30 million since 2016. A lot of that to Super PAC, helping Chuck Schumer and the Senate Democrats. Schumer is a longtime ally in Congress who's played a role in, keeping Congress at least some role in keeping Congress from passing laws that would change how group purchasing organizations work. Campaign donations have gone up a ton in Albany as well since the for-profit companies started generating so much money. You also have a partnership between Greater New York and 1199, the Healthcare Workers Union, that's pretty unique. Typically, you think of, a management-labor relationship as being contentious. But for the past couple of decades, 1199 and Greater New York, the hospitals that employ 1199 workers have really worked closely together. They almost every year do these joint advertising campaigns, pressuring the governor and the legislature to increase healthcare funding. It dates back to actually to George Pataki being governor. He fought them for a while, and then after 1199 and Greater New York's campaigns hurt his poll numbers, he really started more acquiescing by the end of his time in office. Spitzer, Governor Spitzer, Governor Patterson, both had their poll numbers hurt by these campaigns. And by the time Cuomo took office, Governor Cuomo, he kind of tried to almost bring these groups into the fold more to head off an attack from them. Had a pretty close working relationship with the hospital industry and 1199, and with Governor Hochul now. At first, these groups were kind of taking more of a wait and see approach. They weren't attacking her directly. And she's now, not really doing what they want in terms of funding Medicaid spending. And so the last couple months, they've started directly attacking her with TV ads and rallies and things like that. So that cycle is starting again with the new governor or newer governor.
In the name of the article is how the hospital lobby pummeling Hochul's budget brought in $1 billion. Is that ad campaign is starting to work on the governor? Is that the pummeling that you're talking about?
Yeah. As part of this article, about a year ago, I put in a Freedom of Information Law request for emails between Governor Hochul's office in Greater New York. As these things do, this one took a year to come back, and I got it right in the middle of reporting this article, which was some good luck. Anyway, these emails between Hochul's office and Greater New York show kind of how they approach things from the Greater New York side. Last year when they started one of these ad campaigns, they sent an email to Hochul's office, a lobbyist for Greater New York did, basically saying, we're not mentioning the governor in these ads. Like, here's some polling showing how unpopular it is to cut Medicaid, but we're not going to mention the governor in our ads, at least for now. They kind of took the same approach this fall when they tried to get more Medicaid spending. They met with Governor Hochul's office privately, tried to convince her to do this alternative plan that would increase Medicaid spending when Hochul didn't go for that and said she was going to try to cut it by $1 billion in her budget address. They started these ads going after her, trying to be a bit more conciliatory at first and then taking more of a hardball approach if the governor doesn't agree to do what they want.
You know, this article is covering complex financial transactions, lobbying efforts, legislative proposals and processes. I'm wondering what you've uncovered here. What does it mean for people on the ground, meaning people that are seeking health care and possibly the hospitals, the people that are providing it?
I got some notes even from people who worked in the healthcare industry who said they learned some things from this article. I think that this information about group purchasing organizations was more known 20 years ago, and then they really succeeded in getting Congress to back off in terms of passing laws further regulating the industry, and kind of through their campaigns and their self-enforced reforms made it so there was less scrutiny. And I think there may be some scrutiny now again, but people should be aware that this may be a factor in increasing healthcare costs in a way that is not really understood. It's almost hard to say whether that's the case or not, because there's so little public data about group purchasing organization pricing. There are efforts in Congress occasionally to try to get more transparency on this data so we could really know what's going on in terms of how this is being factored into the prices that were being charged for drugs and common goods in hospitals. And there's now an issue of prescription drug supply shortages and the extent to which group purchasing organizations are factoring into that. So there's a lot of different aspects. You know, one thing that I did for this article that I did it for the article was watch a movie called Puncture that came out in 2011. It stars Chris Evans. And it was actually like a really good movie that I would recommend just on its own merits if people are interested in this topic, kind of an easy way to get into the topic of what a group purchasing organization is. It's about this small law firm in Texas that was a personal injury law firm trying to take on a group purchasing organization and all the things that went into that and the challenges they faced. So if people are interested in that, I think that's an easy way to kind of learn the basics of what's going on with this topic.
It sounds like part of what you're saying is if you have an organization that's responsible, that is dedicated to getting money from government to hospitals, and then they also run private businesses that facilitate what hospitals need. I mean, there's no incentive to keep costs down because they benefit from getting the money to pay those costs. Is any of your reporting show that that's already an existing problem, or are you just uncovering that that's a potential problem given that nobody's really looking at this info?
Well, the way that group purchasing organizations originally worked, they started out about 100 years ago. It was basically just groups of hospitals getting together, collectively buying goods from vendors and using their group purchasing power to try to bring down prices. So group purchasing organizations originally were paid out of savings that hospitals generated. So that was a seemingly illogical incentive structure. They were, you know, they were paid based on hospital savings. There were some financial shortfalls for hospitals in the 1980s. And so hospital lobbyists convinced Congress that it would save hospitals more money if hospitals were paid out of vendor payments rather than hospital savings. So that changed the incentive structure where before, if hospitals saved more, that's how GPOs were paid. When the law was changed, it made it so when hospitals paid more, middlemen made more because they were paid an administrative fee out of whatever they could sell to hospitals. So that just changed the incentive structure. Now, whether that has greatly increased hospital costs or not is a point of debate because of the lack of public information. There was a 2010 article published in the Harvard Business Review that looked at some actual data that was obtained aftermarket hospital transactions that found, I think, that prices nationally might be getting inflated $35 billion a year through group purchasing organizations. Of course, that was disputed by the hospital industry. So, yeah, it would be much easier if we knew all the facts and the extent to which prices were going up or down because of this longstanding mechanism. But it's difficult to say at this point.
What's going to happen next?
Well, one thing I did see is that there's now going to be a Federal Trade Commission investigation that Congress is launching into group purchasing organizations. So on that front, there could be some movement in terms of what happens with those kinds of entities. In terms of Greater New York, they've sold off so many assets in terms of group purchasing that they're now basically out of that business. So that's not going to affect them. But I think in terms of Governor Hochul, you know, they'll probably keep donating pretty heavily to the state Democratic Party. They'll keep donating heavily to the legislature, spending more than any organization in New York on lobbying, and expect them to be a huge presence, for decades to come with this $1 billion that they accumulated recently. So,
yeah, and when you chart that they've spent more than any other lobbying organization, I mean that essentially means this is New York State's biggest lobbyist, correct?
Yeah, according to Open Secrets, which is a website that compiles these numbers, the Greater New York has spent vastly more since 2015 on lobbying than any other organization, and that's not even including their alliance with 1199. Where they spend, you know, I don't know, they might spend $10 million this year on that as well, on these joint advertising campaigns targeting the governor. So I think 1199 in its own right is one of the biggest lobbying spenders in the state as well. So when you combine those things there, I think they're clearly the biggest lobbying spender by far.
Thank you for taking the time to do that reporting and then to share it here with our listeners. Thank you so much, Chris.
All right. Thank you.
Been speaking with Chris Bragg, Albany Bureau Chief at New York Focus. The article is How the Hospital Lobby Pummeling Hochul's Budget Brought in $1 billion, and you can find it now on our website, wjffradio.org, and also at nysfocus.com.